Edwin, you would probably acknowledge that here in the U.S. and maybe in other countries too, there is a huge divide going on. People are going to their, you know, I think of it like a prize fight, and after a round, they say, "All right, now go back to your corners." And that's kind of what people are doing. They're going back to their group and their silos, and they're not talking across. And in fact, I think that you even mentioned at some point, you said something about Speaker of the House Pelosi and President Trump are like a dysfunctional couple in some ways, because they're not talking across that divide, either one of them. And I'm not sure if that can be repaired. But we can work towards that in certain ways. We can work that with whatever is close to us. And tell me, how are you working with that?
Well, I think what I said was that the political left and right is like a dysfunctional couple, kind of at a larger social. And to see that at some point you can't really judge either side and say you're wrong, you're right. It's just that we need a way to really listen to each side. It's the exact same dynamic that I was mentioning in my family. You know, it's like, and that can be any family members, you know, so, and we are in a family here, a global family and a family in the country. And so how do we really see everyone's humanity and bring people together? And that's, I just see that as that this empathy movement is the way to do that. And the way, one of the activities we've been doing is these empathy cafes you've mentioned, that we bring the political left and the political right together to use empathic listening to dialogue with each other. We also have the empathy tent, which I mentioned, that we go to political rallies and set up the tent and listen to both sides, and in the tent, bring the left and right together to dialogue. So, you know, we've been trying to reach out. We were just at the Republican convention last weekend in Sacramento. That was the California State Republican Convention. So we talked to Republicans, conservatives, said, "Oh, come to take part in the empathy circle." And we had a lot of really positive comments and people saying dialogue is important. And I remember one man came by and said, "You know, the skill I taught my son is empathy. That's like the most important thing." So there was a lot of support. We had our empathy T-shirts on. We're wandering the halls and just reaching out to people, talking to them, giving information about how to take part in these empathy circles. And then in June is the Democratic convention, the state convention in San Francisco for the Democrats, and we'll go there and we'll reach out. And so we're really trying to reach out and be actively reaching out to both sides to support them, to bring them together, and then use these basic tools just to get the process started. And there's a lot of different tools out there for facilitating dialogue. But this seems to be an easy, like you were mentioning, an easy first step that anyone can use. So we're really trying to popularize and get this empathy circle practice out there.
I know, Edwin, that you've gone to different demonstrations and you've been, you know, kind of right in the thick of it. And you told a really surprising story I heard you tell at some point about how you went and invited the conservative element in, you know, to participate in this dialogue. And they said yes right away, but there was a surprising reaction for the progressives. You were surprised, like the conservatives said, "Oh, yes, we'll come to a dialogue, absolutely." And then you approached the progressives, and they weren't so open to dialogue.
Yeah, that was this was at UC Berkeley. There was rallies. There was some conservative speaker were speaking. There were counter demonstrations, and then the right came, and I invited one of the people on the right to come into the tent. And he said, "Okay, I'll talk." And we actually had then there was some counter demonstrators. And they were just, I invited them to talk, you know, progressive by any means necessary, I think is the organization. And they were just shouting, trying to shout it down. They didn't want to dialogue. And we kept saying, would you like to be in this dialogue? And they just said, not now. And they just were shouting. And we did have someone on the left that did take part. And we, you know, talked for a while. But you know, it was really hard to talk because there was just so much screaming and yelling around the tent. And so it sort of ended quite quickly. So there's some of that on the left not being willing to dialogue, sort of on the far left.
So the left might think of themselves as so open-minded,
yeah.
And yet here that was a case where the people on the right said, "Oh yeah, we'll come and talk," and then the left was not willing. I just found that striking to just notice where in our own beingness where we are resistant. And yeah. I can remember, maybe I've told this story before, but I can remember years ago when I was part of, it was called Leadership Mendocino, and it was a whole group of people, that maybe there were 24 of us, and we were learning all about all the aspects of the county that we were living in, the health aspects, the agriculture, the political, the all, you know, everything. And we stayed together for a year. And one of the people on the committee was the head of the local Republican Party. And I'm more progressive. And so I just avoided him. For months, I just avoided him. I never interacted with him or anything. And finally, one time we were sitting down at lunch and he sat down next to me and he said, "Justine, I really want to hear from you. I want to have a dialogue with you. And I know that you don't want a dialogue with me, but I want a dialogue with you." It blew my socks off, Edwin. And I realized that was my deep prejudice. I thought that I was not a prejudiced person, and I had to confront my own internal prejudice where I was, you know, putting him in a box somewhere. And then it was wonderful. We did have wonderful conversations for the rest of the time that we worked together for that year. And I learned to respect him deeply, and I respected him for approaching me mostly.
For reaching, he reached out to you and wanted to invite you to a dialogue.
Exactly. And so I learned a lot about myself. And that's what we can do in these conversations, is that if we come with a kind of curiosity and openness, oftentimes something is changed.
Yeah. It's really it is that openness, that to be open and not be righteous or self-righteous about, like, I have the answer, is that you're rolling your eyes.
I know, because, man, it's so easy to go there. I roll my eyes when I have the answer. I just, like, any one of us can step into that role at any moment. And that's where it's really good to catch ourselves saying, I have the answer. One of the mantras that I use, I just gave this I think part of a talk that I gave, is the mantra is, "Well, I wonder how this is going to turn out." You know, that something happens and you just think, "Oh, well, the first reaction is to react and to say, oh, this is terrible and whatever." And then to just sort of relax into it and say, maybe I really don't know all of it. Maybe I wonder how this will turn out.
Yeah, it's that judgment. Or maybe it's like, and having those judgments that start, that get in the way. Those are those things like the anxiety, the judgments, the self-righteousness. So there's a lot of different qualities that can block that listening, that empathic listening, that empathic presence. So it's... And actually, that the simple process of empathic listening helps to move through those, right? So if you're judgmental, I can express my judgment towards you, and you just hear my judgments, and the listening to my judgment sort of transforms it. Or even listening, having the person listen to your self-righteousness, like, "Hey, I am right here. You are wrong. Well, I'm hearing you really feel that you're right and I'm wrong. Is there more that you'd like to say?" So the listening and the reflection sort of, it sort of magically sort of transforms that energy into sort of a connecting energy. So that's, yeah. And so if you could have, like, in that conference or that group that you were in, if they would have started with empathy circles, right? If they would have had the different community members say, we're just going to start with a little bit of this connecting. We're going to hear each other. We're going to practice this. And everyone would have sort of gotten grounded. They would have started feeling they're heard. They're feeling like they're understood. They would have developed that trust. And so that's what we're trying to do is really promote that, this basic skill that if we could, you know, have, like you're mentioning, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Trump, that Trump, Nancy Pelosi and Schumer had that meeting in the Oval Office that time and they were talking. If they had been talking, had an empathy circle with the media there for like a couple hours, and I mean, it would have like changed the whole energy. You know, it would have like been a role model to the whole country, like, oh, they're doing it, we can do it too.
You know, what an idea. You know, I'm also thinking, Edwin, that when we have the opportunity to say whatever it is that our judgments or to talk about that which we really fear, that we really fear that this is going to happen because of whatever, and I just start spouting that off. And if there's another person there that is truly receiving that pronouncement that I'm making, there's something very magical. I get to hear myself in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say something about that?
Yeah, it's just being heard, that being here. Like, I have that sense of I'm irritated, and I just want to vent, and I throw my judgments at the other person. But then I hear my own judgments, and I say, I don't really feel that. There's something, I see what's underneath. I'm feeling like I'm just not heard and understand. I'm feeling angry. So my anger, what's my anger about? So I kind of go deeper past those judgments, and that's in the empathy circle. You can throw those judgments out. There's no restrictions on what you can say, so you can express those feelings. And then you start becoming more self-aware of what's of your own inner feel, deeper, what's under, what are the feelings that are under that judgment, and that creates greater connection.
Exactly. I can see that. And I can see that I feel like I've started to hear myself and my own judgments. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Edwin Rutsch, and he is the founding director of the Center for Building a Culture of Empathy. And his website is cultureofempathy.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Edwin Rutsch, and he is the founding director of the Center for Building a Culture of Empathy. And we've been talking this whole hour about empathy. And I know that that many people are working right now. The big thing that's really up is like more equality, marriage equality, and racial equality. And we're talking about, all, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment, all sorts of things that really make like immigration policies, more equality there. But there's something more that we can talk about than equality if we really focus on what do we want. What is the root that we're going for? When I mentioned in the very opening of this interview, you traveled around the world and you found this idea of empathy as a key to this kind of more happy, more equitable world. And that's the whole point, is that if we truly are going for something beyond the equality, what we're going for is more creativity, to work together in collaboration. So we're working from a bigger tent, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So if we really invite in all these dialogues, we are actually inviting in larger possibilities and opportunities for greater creativity. Is that kind of one of the underlying things that we're going for?
Yeah, well, I'm hearing that you're really looking like, what's the deeper essence? Like you're looking at equality as a creativity, like what is really down deep in at the core, and kind of a question, what are we going for? And for me, that is that empathy. Is for me, that's why I call it a building a culture of empathy. It does seem to me that empathy is that deep core that you're talking about, that we really, it goes deeper than just equality. And even there's a big social justice movement. And I think empathy goes even deeper than that. There's like a nonviolence movement, and empathy goes even deeper. It's like, it's more, even more demanding than all of those qualities, and is at the core. So it's really about connecting with everyone's humanity, and it's an ongoing process. You know, it's really about, it's like we don't just connect, but it's like we're doing it in an ongoing way. There's a quote that I really like from Johan Galtung, who started the Peace and Conflict Studies programs in the universities. He's Norwegian. And he says, peace is resolving conflict with empathy, creativity, and nonviolence, and it's never-ending process.
Now say that again, so we really
peace didn't... is resolving conflict with empathy, creativity, and nonviolence, and it's a never-ending process. So there's always new stuff coming up, new feelings, and we want to hear and be and connect with those and work through them with this empathy. That the empathy is like an integrative process. We're constantly hearing each other, we're constantly integrating with each other. And I think that's the first step. And what you're talking about is the creativity, is when we do run into those conflicts, that is actually a source of creativity. Like, how are we going to solve this? And we can't solve it until we really hear all the voices, all the aspects of it. And it's almost like you've probably had that experience where you're in conflict with someone, you got different opinions about something, and you connect and you hear each other, and then like a whole new solution, a whole new energy, a whole new feeling arises that neither of you gave up, you know, you didn't compromise, but like a whole new possibility opened up, and we all feel connected. And I think that is really what the empathy movement is about, is not compromising. I'm not for compromise. I'm for sort of a transformational connecting and kind of whole new new dimensions. New dimensions opening up.
I love it. I know we recently did an interview with Margaret Wheatley, and she really talked about being warriors of the possible. And that has to do with that kind of collaboration. And I'm thinking also of the work of Barbara Fredrickson out of the University of North Carolina, I think. And she really has done a lot of work on happiness. And that when we are in that more positive feeling of openness and trust, then we actually have a broader field of vision. It allows us to see a greater field of possibility. I mean, it's actually a physiological thing. they've done experiments where people, if they're not feeling like positive or whatever, they're feeling negative or depressed, they have this kind of tunnel vision. And I think that the media really exacerbates that in some ways, because you talk about the media as being an echo chamber, and their motivation, let's say like television, is their motivation is ratings. That's their bottom line, is ratings. Maybe secondarily is to give out information and good facts and so forth. But underneath it, they're really trying to attract our attention so they get our eyeballs.
So you're really trying to understand like the media and what it is that what's the underlying motivations and why, you know, with the messages that they put out there. For me, what kind of really struck me is that what you're talking about, including everyone, that it opens up the possibilities of creativity. And, you know, I mentioned the empathy circle a lot here about the, it's just like a first step of for going down the path of building a culture of empathy. But there's also a whole tool set called empathic design, which is also referred to as human-centered design or design thinking. And this is centered in the design schools and is like in the design school at Stanford and a lot of real creative companies, where it's like any problem that you have is, you know, you form a team to work on it, and you start with any problem solving with empathy, really hearing and understanding the problem and all the hearing from all the people. And then you narrow it down to a problem area, and then you open it up to creativity, to really coming up with new innovative ideas. And then you get a whole field of possible ideas, and then you hone in on some that you want to try out, and you do quick prototyping to try out your ideas, solutions, and then you go and test it. And then you start the whole process again of empathizing and kind of iterating on this problem solving. So this mindset, this tool set is already out there, and it's used a lot in the technology field and really the creative, innovative in business and all fields. And they're also using it in the schools now. It's being taught. There's in the Bay Area alone, there's at least 40
schools. San Francisco Bay Area.
There's at least 40 K-12 schools that are using this as sort of a project-based learning. And it all starts with empathy. It all starts with people just empathizing with each other, getting that wide field of possibilities through listening, and then having really creative ideas emerge from that.
Edwin, I can remember in being on a board of directors in an organization, and we had a retreat one time, and we were grappling with a problem. And I just came up with, I said, this is maybe 30 years ago, and I said, oh, I know what we should do. We should all just divide up in groups, and each group go and do their thing, and then come back, and we'll put all those solutions together. And one of the board members said to me, said into the group, he said, well, that's a good idea, but, you know, I want to hang out in the field of where we are right now more before we go to solution. Mm-hmm. And that was a big, like, oh, right. And that's what I think partly what you're talking about is being willing to hang out with understanding the viewpoint of all the people who are involved first.
Yeah. So in the country, we don't want to exclude any political spectrum, any point on the spectrum, because the inclusion creates a lot more creativity and a lot more innovation. But what we seem to be missing is like some tools, some processes for bringing people together. So it's really evaluating, not only being curious, but also valuing all those different points of view, and that each one of those brings something unique. And it's like, how do we work through them? And I think that's really what we're missing is a tool. Nobody's going to win, the left, the right, nobody.
Right.
Ultimately, it's so divided. There's no way one side is going to win. It's going to come through this other, I think, an empathic approach.
I love it. Well, Edwin, I'm hearing you say that this is a way forward if we really take this empathic approach. And I have to say, then we have to be patient with the process, that it's much easier to dictate, here's how it's going to be, and then everybody follow it that way. It's going to take time to learn to listen deeply to one another and to really practice that and develop, as you said earlier, that muscle. So I want to thank you so much, Edwin, for being part of the New Dimensions program today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well. I've been speaking with Edwin Rutsch, and he spells his last name R-U-T-S-C-H. And he is the founding director of the Center for Building a Culture of Empathy. And if you want to know more about his cafes that have been developed under that umbrella and the tents, the empathy tents, all the many different activities, please check it out. cultureofempathy.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3670.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You, too, can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Pam Houston, author of Deep Creek, Finding Hope in the High Country. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about mountains and mothers, animals, writing, and healing.
This is Free Voices at CJSF 90.1 FM, talking to you about
Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. We are 10 board of directors and we are rejoicing for world history. Our show is based on true stories, musical and storytelling and role playing, silent crimes broken, very interesting series of show.
And a lot of in-depth oral tradition. We play every Thursday from 3 to 4. Come and join us.